Every Tuesday, David Farenthold joins us live from the Washington Post. And let's see, get me caught up on what I missed while I was on vacation last week. The FBI raided Rudy Giuliani's home. Do we know what they were looking for?
It seems to have been in relation to Giuliani's work with folks in Ukraine who were trying to influence U.S. policy to help Russia. So, I think Giuliani's being investigated as basically acting as an unregistered foreign agent.
Okay, but I mean, you're allowed to be a foreign agent, you just have to register. So this is pretty much a clerical matter then?
Well, he didn't register, but if you don't register, it's a big deal. This is something that the government has been cracking down more on lately to people who have not registered as foreign agents. And I think in Giuliani's case, it appears to be, I think also that they took a, the feds took a cell phone from another lawyer who was working with Giuliani. So this seems to have been pretty long running contact to help Ukraine and Russia's allies in Ukraine while Trump was president. Mm.
Now, is this something that, I mean, the tweets I've gotten on this allege that Rudy's being framed, there's really nothing to see here. I mean, where do you come down on that?
Well, so this investigation began under Trump's DOJ. Apparently, Trump's DOJ leaders didn't allow the raid to happen while they were in charge. But obviously, this is something that began under Donald Trump's administration. So you'd think if there was anybody who was not interested in framing Rudy Giuliani, it would be the Trump administration.
Yeah.
And the fact of this, I'm no expert on this before, and I've read, the fact of this raid means that the FBI has gone to a judge and presented with this compelling evidence that a crime was committed, and that evidence of this crime would be at Giuliani's apartment. So they've passed a legal hurdle. They've gotten the approval from a judge for a search warrant, although obviously they haven't filed charges against Giuliani yet.
Yeah. It just seems to me after, you know, being framed by Sacha Baron Cohen, this is just piling on.
But well, it's sort of an ironic thing that I think if it had gone further while Trump was in charge and they'd raided Rudy Giuliani in December, he would have gotten pardoned. But because the Trump people kept it bottled up and waited until after Trump left office, Rudy is unpardoned.
Okay. Something having to do with your paper. I've received emails from listeners, and I apologize, I'm not really certain of the source, but they insist that your newspaper has stopped fact-checking Joe Biden. They are not seeing fact checks of they're not seeing you pay attention as much attention to the missteps of Joe Biden as you did to Donald Trump. Is it true?
No, we are fact checking Joe Biden. They wrote the fact checker for the Post wrote a whole column about Joe Biden's fact checks before his Biden's sort of State of the Union-esque speech last week. The problem is that Biden doesn't lie as much as Trump does. Biden, you know, he has some exaggerations. He has some half truths. He's a more typical politician in that way, and that usually what he says is some grounding in reality. Trump was unusual. I mean, we fact checked them both, but you know, there were a lot less facts to catch under Trump, a lot more lies to write about. So we're continuing to cover him. It's just the coverage is different because the people are different.
Yeah. So the key to getting more fact checks on Biden is just to somehow get him to lie a little more.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we are checking everything Biden says, but if there's no lies, you know, then there's not much to check. The difference between – there's a lot of differences between Biden and Trump, one being that Biden doesn't lie all the time, but Biden also doesn't speak all the time. He doesn't have a Twitter account. He doesn't give off-the-cuff press conferences.
That is what a huge difference. I have so many more hours in my day now since that began not happening.
And that was Biden's promise. He said you weren't going to have to worry about him. We're going to have to think about him all the time. And I think he's followed through on that.
Yeah. One thing I also noticed, and which seemed to be trending this morning, is that Republicans are opposing Biden's portions of his American Reconstruction Plan, whatever they're calling it now. But I also understand that they are taking credit for parts of it. So I'm trying to figure out how deep this Republican divide really is. I understand that on Twitter and on social media, they have to protest everything Biden tries to do. That's the way the game is played. But I mean, if you get down to the actual specifics of the types of things this would fund, is there in fact Republican support for it?
Well, if you look at the polls, there is broad support for the things Biden is planning to do with or asking to do with this infrastructure plan. And there's lots of support from Republican mayors and governors, things like that, people who are not in Congress. And the Biden administration's pitch is like, look, when we said bipartisan, we didn't mean you know, we need some number of senators and congressmen. We're talking about people out in the country. You know, people, if Republicans out in the country support this, it's bipartisan, no matter what the Republicans in Congress say. I think Biden has been pretty smart about that, taking his cue from Trump, right? Trump broke the Republican consensus about spending, which has been the attacks on Obama during the Tea Party, which is he was spending too much. Trump spent money like water, and Republicans loved it. And so I think Biden, in that way, is following a path that Trump has laid open to show that if you just spend a hell of a lot of money, people are going to like you better. And I think there's less Republican antagonism toward that because of what Trump did.
Do you think it's time to bring back earmarks? Remember, earmarks were individual members of Congress, I guess mostly senators, were basically given a pot of money, and they could devote them to local projects, typically highway projects or light rail projects. And it was a way of getting more bipartisanship, because Republicans would get just as much money as Democrats would for these local projects. And I know that we threw that out long ago because it was considered to be pork barrel spending. But these were all projects that local people wanted. So what would be wrong with doing that again?
Well, I don't think anything if you policed it, right? I mean, I think the problem with earmarks was that they became abused so that, you know, just to pick one example, there was a Democratic congressman, John Murtha, in Western Pennsylvania. All kinds of crazy federal programs were located in that district, in Johnstown, PA, because he happened to be powerful and on the Appropriations right. Committee. So that it led to a lot of wasteful spending. But you're right. There was a whole consensus built in Washington, like a functioning, you know, a way the Congress functioned because there were these earmarks. And so you could give people something they could take back home to their district. And like, there's a huge tradition of Republicans in southern states running on that. I brought money back home to Mississippi. I brought money back home to Alabama. And when you get rid of that, what they've been running on is just pure ideology. Then you get somebody like Tommy Tuberville from Alabama who's just like, you know, I hate Biden, I hate liberals. You know, if you brought earmarks back and you got back to that situation, Washington might be a more cooperative place. That said, you'd have to do it in a way that meant that people didn't abuse it.
Yeah. I was looking at the census results, and apparently your home state, Texas, the big winner. You're going to get a couple more congressional seats, and people are moving there in droves. The presumption seems to be, though, that they are all the new residents are Republicans. Are they?
No, I don't think so. I think if you look at the – I think the bigger problem for Democrats is that there are lots of folks who are moving there to the big cities who are Democrats, but they're cramming themselves all together in sort of vote sinks in the cities, and they're not changing the dynamics of the suburbs or the exurbs. So Texas has done a huge job bringing in people from all over the country, but the Democrats haven't been able to capitalize, A, because they're just incompetent in Texas, and B, because their folks tend to be clustered together and their votes don't count as much.
Well, taking it out of politics, though, just to the economic policies that make people and businesses want to locate there, they've got no income tax, same as us, right?
Mm-hmm. No income tax.
Okay, so if they have no income tax and we have no income tax and Texas is doing better than we are at luring people in, what else are they doing that we're not doing?
Well, I think that Texas has sold itself as like super low regulation. You know, you don't. It's easy to start a business there. It's easy to, you know, Houston doesn't have any zoning. You can build whatever you want. They've kind of cast themselves as the anti-California. You know, we're warm. You can come to us for our good climate, but you know, we're not going to tax.
Well, I mean, well, does it work? Are people happy there?
I mean, people do seem to be happy. It is really hot, but other than that, I think
zoning can't fix that. But I mean, there's always this fear that if you get rid of zoning, then suddenly you're living next to a coal-fired power plant. You know,
that's Houston, man. that's my hometown. You can literally build whatever you want, and nobody cares. So I think that has really attracted a ton of people to Texas, and it's been very successful in that way. We'll see if it's sustainable.
Really? So you can add a porch onto your house without worrying about impervious surfaces and swamps and some kind of damage to the local crow population? I mean,
as I understand it, you could add a 10-story building onto your house. Nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
Really,
okay.
It's just whatever you do in your house is your castle. That's how Houston's chosen to do it.
Yeah, got it. David Farenthold from The Washington Post. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
It is 8:24, and that's...